No, we were only told. It was a plane going back to England, and it was a light, smaller plane in American things. We never really found out, but we weren't told. A pal of mine, also sadly dead, he did some surveying into it, and it was apparently the American pilot had someone who was teaching, and something went wrong. Don't know what it was, and it just hit the plane, and everybody was killed on the ground. There were about 30 odd people, but we were not told. No, I didn't know what I was going to do. I just went, and they said, "Oh, you're going to work with Flight Lieutenant Spooks." That's not his name, really. We called him Spooks because he was a very strange-looking man. He looked like a ghost, but he was a gentleman. He was. He's the one that gave me the list to type out for promotions, and I suddenly found myself, "Oh, me!" But no, I was most fortunate, and. I was shown a typewriter and said, "That's your typewriter." And I said, "I can't type." And Sergeant Cook said, "You will before you leave here." And that's right. And I did. Because I had to do all the official things, you know. No, I was given, well, Sergeant Cook did my hand. And so did another corporal. It was a black man in Malta. It was then. No. And he was a really nice chap. And he was respected as, and in those days one didn't see coloured people very much. But I can't ever remember seeing him before. But he was tall and very nice. He was second in charge of the bigger office, you know, for all the admin. And everybody respected him. Even rough and ready people liked him. You couldn't. Like him. And I'll just digress slightly. Last year, there was on the television, they were interviewing people who'd been in the war and also people who'd been in forces. And I was looking at this and I went, you know, I gaped because there's this elderly chap and it was him. It was him. I'm trying to remember. I know it awfully well. But I couldn't believe it. And so I wrote to Granada and said, you know, I'd seen this gentleman. I said, and they contacted me and they said, oh, he'd been the mayor of Bradford after his service, you know. And they. Gave me his address, and I sent him a letter and a Christmas card, and I got one back. And he was going into hospital, but he said, "When I come out and I'm fit, I'd love to meet up with him." Wasn't that strange? Very strange. I never heard from him after that, actually. So I presume, because he was 78, I think it said at the time. But it was so nice. To see him, and it brought all the memories back, you know, all the memories back.
But do you think he suffered
any sort of racial discrimination? He didn't there, no. And which is unusual. Perhaps so, but he was such a nice chap, always pleasant, and it's still got a slight accent, you know, after all those years. But he was so nice, and I think it perhaps was a good thing that my first coloured person that I've met was him, because he was so nice, and you kind of think, oh, they must all be like that, you know, sort of thing. I mean, I'm not a racist at all. One of my best friends are Asians, you know. So, but seeing him was wonderful.
So you're putting
yourself this? Yes, that's your target. Well, the corporal did help me, actually. He wasn't supposed to. He wasn't in that office. But he said he'd had to learn, so he did. So anyway, as long as I didn't make more than about half a dozen mistakes on the piece of paper, my officer didn't really matter, because he said to me once, well, you can do most something I can't do. He says, I can fly a plane. He says, but I can't type, you know. So I was very lucky because there was just this environment with the officer and Corporal Sergeant Fox, rather, that you married to a German. I thought that was funny, that, having been in, you know, being the naive, being in the war, and he married a German. We grow up. Well, it was a very interesting, and I'm so grateful I went there, because it was a special squadron, number 73 squadron, and it was the only one in Malta. There were two others, but it was whenever there was any problems, 73 squadron were the first there. So it meant we were rehearsing, we had to rehearse how to pack, and, you know, I'd learnt what those who'd been there before. And if there was any trouble, 73 squadron had to be ready and out in 3 hours, including planes and practically all the people there and all the equipment. And we rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed. Well, it was to see how long you would do this, and you were timed. You know. Well, my job was to get all the information and put it into special carrying things. And it was my responsibility to check that everything was there. That's right. Yes, all the written information. That's right. And of course, our officer was in charge of the repairs for the RAF thing. So I had files for all the different planes and what they needed doing and what they'd had done, etc. And I loved it. And then I found out that every so often they had one of these emergencies and they flew somewhere.
A real emergency?
No, a practice, you know, but you flew somewhere and they were all kidding me on. They thought, you'll not be able to go. No, you'll not be able to go, they said. You know, you've not been here long enough. Anyway, one night in the cinema, it was really the game room, you know, we had a cinema, and we were watching Samson and Delilah, that gorgeous German woman, was it? I can't think of her name then. And it was about half an hour to go, and we were watching it, and this alarm went off. And it was a practice, and so we had to run out of there, go and do your job, fetch your things, and be ready. And they flew us to Egypt. The only trouble is, when we got there, they hadn't got any accommodation for us. So we went into a cinema, and we were allowed a seat for your luggage, you know, and a seat to sit and sleep on. We only did it for overnight, but and then they moved us on. But had been to Egypt. And then other towns, been to Cyprus, yes, and then, no, Cyprus, when we went to Cyprus, we were there for about 7 or 8 days, which was rather interesting. No, but it's just ready. However, all these things that happened in Iraq have been very, very, brought memories back to me, because there was the Iranians and the Iraqis weren't at peace, and the Iranians were going into Iraq and blowing up things, and so we actually were flown there and to a place called Shaiba, and it's a place that hardly anybody's ever people could be in the RAF for years and never have heard of Shaiba. Strangely enough, my next door but three neighbour is 90, and he was over there in the war at Shaiba, Iraq, near Basra, where all the trouble's been. And of course, it was the first time ever I went on guard with a bullet, you know, because they used to creep in, you see. So we were in Shaiba. There was nothing to do in Shaiba. The buildings were submerged, just the top of them, because of the heat. So when our soldiers were out there recently, and it was 140, I was with them in mine. And you used to go down the shop down there, and there was nothing to do.
It was a
RAF place, because in those days Britain had a lot to do with the running of Iraq, you know, before it became its own a republic of its own. But it was pretty fearsome because the terrible heat and knowing that these things were happening. And I said to one of the sergeants from Shida, it was only normally that it was an army place, but we were the RAF union. I said to this sergeant, what do you do if, you know, when you're on duty then? Because I had visions of, you know, all sorts of horrible things happening. And he said to me, oh, don't worry about that, lad, don't worry about that. He said, if they come at you with a knife, they'll cut your throat, you'll never feel a thing. Now, here's a lad, 18 and a half, you know, carrying a rifle, and he's told not to worry, they're 3 foot behind you, and you know, he won't feel it. Fortunately, I didn't. But it's those things that you laugh at, you know, you think, stupid or so and so. It's the first time I was on, you see. No, just round by where the aircraft were. And, I mean, everybody could have crept up, but they didn't. Oh, yes. The army did one side and we did the other side. But it lasted for, we were there for about 5 weeks. And, I mean, the heat is, you know. And I remember Matthew, who I mentioned earlier, as my best man when I got married. Matthew and I had been having a walk round because some of the Iraqis lived in a kind of a little section, and they built the little houses made out of oil drums and things. You know, they were so poor, desperately poor. And we'd been there, and suddenly there was a snowstorm, I was going to say, a sandstorm. And it appeared from nowhere, and it was horrific. And there happened to be a tent there. And Matthew and I rushed in there, and there was some cloth or something on there. And we stayed there for ages. And it was fearsome, really fearsome, frightening. And when we stood up to come out, Matthew said, look. And it looked as if we'd wet ourselves. And it was actually just our perspiration in the heat and in the tent and the whole thing. And it was awful. And so when I was, you know, listening to the news and that, and they kept mentioning Basra, because Basra was the nearest place to Shaiba. And we were taken there a couple of times. A beautiful, beautiful city. And that's why when it was all being blown up and whatnot, I was thinking about all those wonderful old things in Basra. No, they took us on the back of a lorry, about 2 hours to go, about an hour's journey, I suppose. But it was interesting. But it was, and also it's the first time I'd ever seen the ladies, you know, with their faces covered, because, you know, they looked odd and used to think, I wonder what she really looks like, you know. But the poverty was awful. And I mean, the river that goes through there, you'd see someone getting drinking water out, you'd see other people bathing in it, men of course, no ladies, no ladies, and children, and you'd see other people doing rather indelicate things, and you used to think, and that's what they drink, you know, the poverty was dreadful. And if you were polishing anything, and some of the children would come, they'd beg you for the tin. I don't know what they did it with it. I don't know what they did. Anything. They would take it. And the poverty, I don't know. It was really sad. Really sad. You know, I had a big lump in the throat kind of thinking, now, just imagine my brothers going around begging. The few that could understand you, those that lived in this little place, a little site, they did odd jobs, you know, they wash theatres down and things like that, just for the copper or two, you know, and they'd come and ask if you wanted anything doing, and most of them couldn't speak English, but those that had been there some time, you know, they'd been around and you could understand them. In fact, the first time I ever had a black coffee in my life was in Shiba. Chap was selling this coffee, and I'd never tasted coffee, and I had it. It's the first time I had it. It was awful, but and it's the first time I coffee's my favourite drink, actually. But it's, you know, strange how you think of these things. But it was the poverty and the way they almost grovelled. You know, even to me, an 18-year-old, how they were, oh, thank you, thank you. You know, life can be cruel for some. Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, yes, oh yes. We had the planes up there, yeah, and they're Vulcans. But one of our officers actually got killed, but it was an accident. And it was a really nice guy, and he did something wrong in his plane and crashed, and it was quite sad. But that's, you know. But oh yes, yes. We actually, he was brought back, taken back to Malta, and buried in the special one for the force, as you know. And we had a little parade for him, you know. But he was a really nice chap. He was the sort of fellow that, when he wasn't on duty, he was almost one of the boys, almost, not quite. Terribly, terribly superior, you know, in that way. But he was a real nice chap, and you know, makes you think how vulnerable anyone can be. How he actually happened, I don't know. But and sadly, again, when they went to Cyprus, and I didn't go on that occasion, and we also lost another officer over there doing some, you know. But it was interesting because, you see, I got taken to places I'd never been to, and always, you know, taken up in a plane. I loved it. In fact, I almost made inquiries about signing on. I really did. I loved it so much. And at the last minute, I thought, no, my mum will never, you know, I know it's silly. But I did. I got the paperwork and everything. And I was going to sign on for 3 years, but I didn't. Yeah, I was fortunate actually because I only really at Christmas. It sounds silly, but they were separate. And you saw them on duty, etc., or if you had to go and get your pay and things like that. And they did bond together. But you only really got to know the ones we worked with. I mean, I worked with those really nice people. You know, and the commanding officer was very nice, actually. But I only ever saw him two or three times. And the only reason I saw him was, if anybody does something wrong, they're marched in with two guards. And because my office was there, the big office, if they hadn't anybody else, it's a, oh! And I had march in with them. And I had to stand there, listen to all what they'd done, you know, and march them back again. A bit of pinching, getting too drunk, causing a bit of trouble. Setting the blanket on fire, I remember that one. A Scottish lad, Andy, he was always smoking and he fell asleep one night, and I woke up actually first and shouted, and me and another chap, we, you know, chucked him out of his bed sort of thing. Well, of course, once a week we went and got the new sheet, you see, it lasted you a week, and he took the other one back. And there's old Andy wondering, how on earth am I going to get away with it? But he got away with everything, this guy. He really did. He was always in trouble. He's a really nice chap. Always in trouble. And the officer comes along and watches with his or anything. And he did it like this, and he was just about to throw it, hope that it would get in the pile and not be noticed. And the officer, something attracted the officer, and he looked away. And we all thought, he's done it again. He's got away with it. Whose was that blanket? I don't know. Not mine. He was always in trouble. He once took one of the lorries out. He couldn't drive. Middle of the night, took the lorry out. He was chased, and they never found him. He was back in bed when they were looking for him. But he was a character, a Scottish man. No, nothing. There was a nasty plague at one time, and three people from our unit, they got it. They were flown to Germany. Don't ask me why Germany. It had a peculiar name, but it was deadly, very, very deadly. They never came back. Whether they got over it, I don't know. But they were flown to Germany, and they were in a heck of a state. And yes, at Flint. Well, it started off with sickness and feeling tired, and then suddenly it's something to do with an animal. You know, it's passable by snakes and things like that. But they were dangerously ill. But whenever, that's the thing, you don't follow it through, you don't allow it to you. I can't tell you, you know. But that's about the worst thing I can remember. And the other nice thing was, we went on duty at 7 o'clock in the morning, and we finished at 12, unless there was something happening. And then they used to do the lorries to take us down to the beach. And that's where I got so good at swimming, etc. Yes, or, if not, played badminton in the hall. So, you see, only worked from 7 to... It was amazing. I thought it was... It was only if you were on duty. If you were on guard duty, that was different. I mean, you had to be on duty, even though... And strangely enough, it always seemed that Matthew and I'd be on duty. On guard. It was mere coincidence. And we always seemed to be put in the hangar, where the repair hangar, you know, where the planes were there. And it was very isolated. And... I was on duty several times with Matthew. Odd arena. But we were on duty all the time, and it was pretty quiet. But fortunately, there didn't seem to be much crime or burglary or anything in Malta, because we never ever saw anybody. But we were there. But it's something I've always been glad I went. I mean, they couldn't have picked anyone who wanted to go abroad more than I, because I'd never gone, because one didn't. I mean, okay, we've been to Australia a lot, we've been to America a lot, we've been all over the world. But that's now. In those days, another interesting thing was, when the Queen was Princess Elizabeth, yes, well, guess where she used to go? She used to come to Carly, which is where I was. And we were all ordered to be away. But we used to see her riding around. And then Prince Philip came for a while as well. So we were all, you know, we weren't allowed to take photographs or anything. But we knew that. That's right. We knew who was in there. And apparently spent a lot of time off the boat. You know, special privileges. We saw her, you know, riding around and him, but always her. And she always had a lady, obviously a lady in waiting. And that was quite interesting, you know.
What did you think of the family?
Well, I'd been brought up to think that they were really very, very important, you know, and to respect them, you know. Things like that, but for us to see her dressed in, you know, jumpers and things, and she would give you a little smile if she saw you, but you weren't allowed to react. You see, you were supposed to stand, But they used to come quite a lot. When I don't know. She lived in a palace that belonged to some Italian aristocracy, because a lot of the Italian aristocrats actually lived in Malta. In the war, they went back, but they came back again. And she lived in one of these big things when she stayed. But there was something to do with the officer in total charge in the army part, because it, and whether we were friends or even related, I don't know, because when he spoke, it was
good sir, you know.
So they obviously were friends, or there could be even be relations, I don't know, but that's why we saw it. And also, ours was the only place that had a nice flat part around it, you know, so they could go ride in there. And, I mean, I remember telling my mother, and my mother thought I'd made it up. They came from somewhere. Yeah, they came from somewhere. The horses came first. And there was, there was a concert there once, and Petula Clark was on, but we weren't, you perhaps don't remember. But we weren't allowed to go because we weren't officers, but, you know, but they liked to have a look at her, you know. But there we are.
So what did you do in your off-duty?
Well, I went out a lot because I'm interested. I mean, it's such an interesting island, you know. These old buildings going back, you know, many centuries. And I just loved it. And I was a bit of a loner when I was doing that because not many of the other guys wanted to do it. But you see, there again, Mrs. Beth. Mrs. Betty's fault. She got me interested in these things. And I went to excavating, and I like to go to Gozo. Oh, it's heavenly, Gozo. It's totally different to Malta, you know, the Maltese, but when you get on Gozo, there's a different, everything's different. It's odd to say that they're two islands so close to each other. And I used to do a lot of exploring, and they have caverns and things, you know, where you can climb down and where they used to hide, and I loved it. But, he's got, you know, when we got paid, once a fortnight, we could afford a meal and a drink, and we'd go out, and then for the rest of the next 13 days, we'd nothing, but, you know, lots to do. Well, Rabat is at the back of Tirale, and so you didn't bother going by road, you just climbed over the wall, and, you know, you went up to Rabat. So we went to Rabat. If we'd no money, we went up to Rabat. And sometimes Paddy would be up there and he'd shout us and we'd get a drink, you know. But, and I say, I got to know this Maltese couple, you know, and so I got invited, you know, to Patrick's home. Called Patrick because his grandfather was an Irishman. Because it sounds strange when you talk about a Maltese friend called Patrick. But so I saw quite a bit of their own culture. But we used to go up on the bat on a Sunday for a laugh. Because in those days, I suppose it's changed now, the girls used to walk in groups on their own, and the Maltese lads used to walk, you know, and they had a funny name for it, I don't know. Sunday parade. And it was so strange that they did it, you know. Obviously, they eventually met each other, but it was always on Sunday morning, the girls that way and the Maltese boys that way. And we thought it was so comical, you know, we were quite rude about it, I think. But it was, I must remember to ask next time we go to Malta to ask if I still do it. I doubt it very much.
Stanley Cook, end of reel two.